Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education, your weekly guide to education matters in Ireland and further afield. I'm Sean Delaney and you can get in touch with me through Twitter with the handle at Inside Ed, by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie or through the programme's website insideed.com. If you'd like to recommend a guest for a future programme, I'd be delighted to hear from you. In March this year, I brought you an interview with a young teacher who had thoughtful ideas to share about critical thinking, technology in education and teaching in general. Her name was Bianca Ní Gróagáin, and when I spoke to her, she was on a career break from her position in Griffin Valley Educate Together National School while working on a PhD in Dublin City University. Well, on Saturday the 6th of June last, the education community in Ireland was shocked to hear that Bianca died suddenly. She was only 32 years old, and I extend my sympathies to her heartbroken family and friends. When I spoke to Bianca, one of my questions to her was about who had inspired her. One person she named was Seamie O'Neill, who had lectured her when she was a student teacher in Freble College. The other part of Bianca's answer to who inspired her is my way of introducing this week's guest on the programme, and it went as follows.
One is Mags Almond. She's a just retired secondary school teacher from Carlow, not from Cavan, living in Cavan. I'm very proud to be from Carlow. And I think Mags took me under her wing, and she tells the story that, you know, I hustled up to her at a teach meet and asked if I was, I told her I was interested in helping out. And we've kind of become friends ever since, and we travel a lot together and we do a lot of work together. I suppose she would be the person I'd go to for advice when it comes to my career.
Just 3 days before Bianca died, I met with Mags Almond in the Merino Institute of Education and recorded an interview with her. At Mags's request, broadcasting the interview was postponed until now as a mark of respect to Bianca. And I hope to speak to Mags and to some other guests early in the next school year as a tribute to Bianca. But for this week, I'm delighted to talk to Mags in her own right. When we spoke, I first asked Mags why she became a teacher.
By chance, I think, in one way. I was doing a science degree, wasn't sure what I was going to do, but my old school, Loretto and Navan, needed a substitute teacher for a few weeks around the time I did the degree. And I sort of realised, yeah, I'm not bad at this. I think I may go and do the H-dip. It was easy in those days. That's what you did. You turned around and did the H-dip.
But at the time, you were doing a degree in science.
Yes.
So how did that come about?
I think possibly because I loved my biology teacher. She was my maths teacher. She was one of my mentors. She was our principal. And my friends were going to UCG. So I went to UCG and signed up for science because I loved it.
And what do you remember from those science lessons, from that favourite teacher in secondary school?
I think it was that thing about the way the teacher made you feel. We felt good when we were in the room with her, and we felt she told us wonderful things, but she let us ask questions and she answered them with us rather than to us. She was called Carmel Gallagher, and I'll always thank her for it.
And when you say the way she made you feel, I mean, like, we think of teachers as being there to help students learn facts or to learn about life and so on, but, you know, what, could you elaborate on that?
I think it was a confidence. We were very young. We were far younger leaving school and doing our leaving cert than our daughters. My daughters are now. It was an all-girls school. She was just a strong woman, and she made us feel strong about ourselves and comfortable in our learning, and happy, joyous. That was the word I would use, joyous.
So did you want to bring some of that joy to students then when you started teaching?
Well, I don't know if it was as altruistic as that. It was an organic thing. I suppose I was comfortable in it. I found I was good at it. And it was a nice way. It was a nice way to go.
So how would you describe your own approach to teaching?
I like to learn. I'm kind of geeky and nerdy, and I still like to learn. I like to watch someone else learn. So I kind of tell them things, but as the years went on, I like to just let people try and find things out. Maybe it's because one of the things I loved when I taught was transition year, where you had the freedom to go for something, take a topic and go for it. So I don't know if it's, I don't want to use any of the buzzwords, but experiential learning and investigative learning. Science lends itself to that.
Okay, so can you remember any lessons, or can you remember how you'd approach teaching any particular science topic over the years?
Okay, let's go for electricity. I would have been a very bad physics student, and over the years my physics colleagues would have helped me to understand electricity in a particular, an experiential way. It's something, we use something called the big circuit, and I now use a little toy called the chicken. And rather than learning by, here's the definition, let's go find out about it, here's the electricity in your hands, now let's go and find out what we need to know about it. Not quite fun, but not far from fun. Curiosity, creativity and curiosity, try and awake it in the student.
And would all the students have their own circuit then?
No, what I love about the big circuit is that we're all part of the one circuit. We all have a part of the circuit. Somebody has the wire, somebody may have bulbs, and we'll all join up in a large circle. I like circular learning. I don't like straight rows. And it could be a problem in the lab sometimes, but sometimes when you're all in one big circle or one large group to start discussing something, or just sort of pierce the questions or pierce the topic and start letting questions bubble out, I'm comfortable with that. And then eventually we might have our own small circuits and see how far we'll go.
How did you learn to teach then?
I don't know. By a lot of it is chance, I think. If it works today, let's build on that tomorrow. If it doesn't work today, maybe we'll jump. But just try stuff. It depends on the group that's in front of you as well. I mean, a group of first years and a group of sixth years, you might approach in a different way. It depends on whether, if it's your first time to meet a group, if you know them very, very well, it's very different to each group. I mean, some people say, is teaching boring? You do the same thing over and over again. It's not. It's very, very different. It's like the rain falling down the windscreen of a car. The drop never falls the same way twice. So I don't know how I learned to teach. I keep saying I'm just lucky, and it happened and it worked.
But still, you say you changed over the 35 years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely, in the last 10 to 12 to 15 years, became much less controlling. And I learned slowly that the world did not end if I didn't. We all didn't breathe in and breathe out together and write the same thing at the same time. And even with the very high stakes, leaving cert, which is the holy grail of large school of girls, you can very slowly start to let students become responsible for their own driving, their own learning, and not have a bad effect on the points, the 600.
Because I think one of the reasons is that in the early years of our teaching, we're often very concerned about student behaviour and things like that. So it sounds as if you relaxed over the years,
yeah,
and that just became, you were always able to take that for granted.
Well, funny, I think I started relaxed. I think in 35 years ago, started relaxed, and then sort of that academic thing gets in and you become very, very controlling. And then towards the end, I realise, no, it's not. You've got to let people drive their own lives. And the world won't end.
Right. And if we get on then to an area that I know you're passionate about, and that is the whole area of professional development. I mean, okay, suppose we start off before, again, I know we're going to talk a lot about the Teach Meet, which is something that mm-hmm. you introduced to the country. But before Teach Meet, what do you remember from professional development experiences?
I remember that I liked to go to the professional development courses. I used to do whatever the department had on during the summer. Now, that is fado, when the department provided summer CPD for teachers. And I just liked to learn. But what I realised was I liked to be in the company of a really good teacher and other good teachers, to learn from each other, to watch how a really good teacher would work and explain and allow us to learn, and then bring that back to my own classroom. And I realised I was being influenced by people I saw. I was a very active member of the Irish Science Teachers Association for years, and some of the people nationally who worked and still are working for their colleagues just kind of fired me up. And then a chance came, 2003, a chance came to leave my classroom for a while and go on secondment when a new course was being brought in for our Junior Cert Science. So I kind of took it. I just loved it. I did seven years. Absolutely loved working with colleagues all over the country. Loved it.
And what was new about this science programme?
We were moving from quite a didactic pen and paper science course to a science course that had a practical component, an investigative component. It was called coursework, and there were prescribed investigations students could do. And there was also an element of investigations of their own choice, which I liked. I liked that idea. So it was quite a learning curve for us and for teachers to move into it, but it has been adopted well. The CPD is over. People are doing their own thing. It's going to continue. The practical element is going to continue in the junior cycle. So the big change was students actually doing practical work rather than being told by one person at the end of the room what to learn.
And is that more resource intensive?
Oh yeah. Stuff. I used to like waiting for the first question that would come from teachers on in-service day would be, where'd you get that? Much is that? How do we get that? Where do we order that? So yeah, very stuff intensive, very fabulous science equipment, and the contents of your kitchen cupboards as well. A lot of, what do they say, the joke, teaching is the only job where we steal from the home to bring to the office. A lot of stuff brought into school for our investigations.
And can you say a little bit more about your participation in the Irish Science Teachers Association?
Yeah, there was a teacher in Coutil, Kathleen Eames. So she gathered all the science teachers in Cavan together once and said, you know, there's an ISTA, Irish Science Teachers Association. Nationally, we should have a Cavan branch. And fair play to her. For years and years, myself and our colleagues around Cavan had, I was the rep on the council in Dublin. And we would have meetings 3-4 times a year. Sometimes we would meet to discuss the papers from the summer. That would always be the big meeting to get people in. But somebody might come and do some practical work with us, or some of our colleagues from Dublin might come down and give a course. It was a great way just to keep in contact with your colleagues in other schools around Cavan and Monaghan. And it went into hiatus for a while, but thank goodness it's back up and running again, thanks to some of my colleagues in Cavan and Monaghan. It's a great, vibrant group, and it's a support group. It's a great support group for teachers.
Talking about teaching,
how would you approach this? How do you get your students? How do you organise your groups? What way do you find this works? Actually, the coursework I spoke about is a great catalyst, because now what we've started to do is, when the coursework is announced, we have a meeting. We get together, the teachers ourselves, to say, how would you, there's a physics, there's a chemistry, there's a biology investigation. How would you approach this? How would you approach that? What would you think of? And we just bounce ideas off each other. And in that way, then, we're kind of prepared to go back to our various classes of 24 students, some of whom are interested, some of whom are not, and try and enthuse them and get them moving on it. So that's such a huge help to any teacher.
If we go on then to the TeachMeet, what exactly is a TeachMeet?
TeachMeet is my favourite form of CPD. Funny, it's one of the best things to have come out of the economic crash in this country. Well, I'll tell you where it came from first, and then we can talk about what it is. When I was working on the support services, I was allowed to go to the Scottish Learning Festival. Imagine a learning festival. We were just blown away by this. A learning festival, a Phelan Foulama. We were going, okay, we'll have to have one of those. Now we have Failcha in the Teaching Council. But the other group I'm very, very proud of and very, very involved with, Sean, is the Computers and Education Society of Ireland. It's the teachers' professional network without subject, without portfolio. It's the teachers who love to use tech in their teaching. And one of my mentors and friends there is called John Heffernan. So John said, come along to the Teach Meet in Scotland. I had my brain rewired that evening, because we went to an evening where there were round tables set out like a wedding. There was an MC, like a DJ, Ewan McIntosh, world famous now. Ewan runs his own consultancy for education. And there were like 2-minute presentations, 7-minute presentations, and soapbox conversations. And it was fun. And it was randomly chosen by a fruit machine on a computer screen. And I just thought, this is massive. This is, I want one of these.
When you say randomly chosen, it was the speaker was randomly chosen.
The speakers, everyone who was coming along said, yeah, I'll speak or I won't. And they waited, and randomly their name came up. Okay, Sean, you're next. Mags, you're next. You didn't know when your turn would come.
And do we say in advance how long we would be prepared
yes,
to speak for?
Yes, I'll do a 2 minute or I'll do a 5 or 7 minutes. It depends. It changes from teach meet to teach meet. Or if you want to have an intensive conversation with a smaller group, instead of having a break in the middle, you have a breakout. And I call them soapboxes. I don't know what Ewan called them. To me, they're the most powerful part of a teach meet. But it's the fun. And then everyone goes to teach eat afterwards. And if they're lucky, there could be some, you know, social aspect to the evening. And I just came back to Ireland and said, I want one of these. And it just happened that the economic crash happened. SESI conference had to go from 2 days to one. And I said to John, let's ask Conor Galvin. He was the chair of SESI at the time. Let's ask Conor, can we have one of these? So one Friday night in 2009, 60 of us packed into a hotel room in the Maldron. John that night introduced us all to Twitter. We had never seen it. We didn't know what a hashtag was. And TeachMeet just took off from there, and there have been about 40 since.
Okay, so how long does it last for, the evening?
90 minutes to 2 hours, depending on where you are and the venue. But it's like, it's kind of like anything else. People have a, you know, they've got a short attention span. Keep it short and sweet. About 90 minutes to 2 hours is comfy. And then some little food to eat at the beginning or the end, that may lengthen it. But about an hour and a half, double class, let's say, in school, something like that. And broken up into small, very interesting pieces. Primary, secondary, third level, all mixed together. I mean, there are no boundaries to what you can talk about at a teach meet. They started at SESI meets and they were techie. Now it's everything meet. We have... Let me think now. We've had their primary East, Kathleen and Kira in the East. They run primary teach meets. Kathleen Ivrin also run principal meet. That's fantastic. She got into the IPPN and ran principal meet. John has run online student teacher meetings. What else have we been in Dingle? We've been at several conferences. We go to Tipperary, to Pamela O'Brien's ICT, EDU. Teach Meet, Johnny Gall, three of our members have run them up there, Fiona, Maggie and Susan. So it's spreading nicely. SPHE Network, they ran one. Freble Teaching College ran one. Anne McMurrah of this parish, I have a funny feeling she's run mini Teach Meets with her students. It's a good model. It's a great model.
And how can someone who's never been to one find out about what's going on?
Well, at the moment, fair play to John Heffernan, he has tidied up and sorted out a wiki. On Wiki Spaces, there's Irish Teach Meets. And he's gone back historically. Every single one that's been in Ireland since the beginning, we think we've scraped them all together and put them there. And then the pendings. The pendings at the moment is Susan Leahy is running a foreign language one for teachers of modern foreign language in October. We're inviting everyone, including yourself, to Cavan on the 16th of October for Teach Meet Cavan. And as far as I know, there may be one in this house in September. I heard the words Merino and Teach Meet in the one sentence recently.
Okay, that's good. Something to look forward to. Mm-hmm. And you said that this might have been one of the best things to come out of the economic downturn.
Yeah.
Why was this easier to run than a regular conference?
It's democratic. It's bottom up. It's all voluntary. It's free. It's voluntary. You may need to find a sponsor to help you out with things, but everyone who gets up to speak has a small story to tell of something that worked in a classroom. It's almost 90% classroom experience driven. And what I have loved about it is I go to teach meet and I maybe tell something about something that's worked for me at Mold or whatever I worked in my own classrooms. But then I hear how my first and second class primary colleague is using robots on the floor with her infants to learn Irish. I suppose it's the generosity of teachers teaching themselves and teaching each other that's wonderful about it.
And is there any record of it available afterwards? Because I'm just kind of thinking, if I'm being bombarded by all these really good ideas, I'm going to have forgotten the first one by the time I get to number five.
That's really important. And again, we leverage the internet. What we try to do is either somebody promises to write a blog post and put all the links on, or we just gather everybody's links and presentations and make them available either through the SESI website. I know Pamela in Tipperary makes them available through the conference website. Usually whoever's hosting it takes responsibility for gathering the links and putting them in one place where, you know, people can go back. Sometimes you'll get an A4 sheet, old school, to take away with the links with the links on it. That's wonderful. And you do see people furiously scribbling. But actually, the best place to find records now is Twitter. They're all hashtagged. So we would have, you know, hashtag TM Sessie for the Sessie meets, hashtag TM East for the East, hashtag TM Donegal, hashtag TM Cavan, have to get my plug in. So you go back, search the hashtag, and you, everybody tends to put their links on. So it's a kind of a nice sideline of Twitter as well, to have all your notes. Your notes are there.
It sounds like a great innovation in professional development. Mm. And you introduced it to Ireland based on what you saw in Scotland. Where did it originate originally?
Well, the gentleman I mentioned, Ewan McIntosh, I actually saw a tweet last week. It's 9 years old since he and some of his education colleagues got together. He's a former keynote speaker in SESI. Again, John Heffernan brought him over and Connor. He just got a few friends together. I forget what they were called first. EdTech Roundup, it could have been. But they then renamed it as Teach Meet. It does exactly what it says on the tin. Teach Meet followed by Teach Eat. So forward-thinking colleagues in Scotland. It's now, it's not quite worldwide, but it's not far off it.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Definitely worth looking up. I first got to know you through Twitter. And then I met you at SESI conferences after that. But as of last night, you had sent 11,200 tweets. How would you sum up for listeners what your tweets are about?
Oh my goodness, I didn't realise that. Again, as well as TeachMeet, I would say for me, Twitter has become the most powerful form of CPD I have ever met. Most of them, I would say, are about education. I actually heard a rumour that most of Twitter, if it was divided into a pie chart, is not about somebody's dog and what they had for breakfast. It's about education. And I would suspect, I need to look at that 11,000 curve. I lead a very sad life. But I would suspect if we looked at it, a lot of those are on a Monday night between 8:30 and 9:30. Now, I know you've spoken on Inside Ed before about EdChat and EdChat.ie. And fair play to our colleague in SESI, our NCCA colleague, Fred Boss, just took a notion and brought the EdChat format to Ireland. So on a Monday between 8:30 and 9:30, I'm just finished watching University Challenge, curled up on the sofa, chatting to my colleagues all over Ireland and further about whatever topic we have decided for that evening. But now EdChat.ie has become a 24/7 hashtag. So if one of us sees something that would be of interest to our colleagues, we just send the link and tag it with EdChat.ie. At least that's my excuse for 11,000 tweets. Some of them are about food. Yes, some of them are about food. And some of them may be about randomly other strange and geeky, a lot of geeky things, but mostly education. That's my excuse.
Okay. And what kind of discussions on EdChat have you found particularly memorable?
Well, funny, the last one, I was the one who... I nominated the last one. It's the first time we're very democratic as well. Fred asks us each week to nominate and vote for what we want to talk about. And about 3 or 4 weeks ago, my colleague Nigel, who is a primary teacher, got some stickets from his sixth class students about what they were thinking about in going into second level school. And I was really taken. I was taken by one student's fear was mean teachers. That's what he wrote. Now, I know it's a boys' school, and he'd written mean teachers. And as a second level teacher, I felt so guilty. And I thought, oh my goodness, here's this youngster after 8 years in primary school, probably loved every minute of it, afraid of the mean teachers he was going to meet. So I suggested the topic of, could we have maybe a little more dialogue between second level and primary as to, or help the students with that transition. I think we did discuss it before, but we had a great discussion from both sides. I was looking at it from the guilty party on the mean end, and the fifth and sixth class teachers were talking about how they were very busy preparing their students for second level. So it was a great conversation. It went on for about 3 days.
That's the good thing about it, that it's not confined, as you say, to the 2 hours.
We've had really argumentative. Really argumentative conversations and shots across people's bows about CPD or, you know, departments not doing enough for us and give out. It's kind of like a big long staff meeting, but usually Fred keeps us all in. He kind of keeps us all tied together, summarizes at the end. We do part friends. We all part friends.
That's good, because one of the things that people say about teachers is that we're like, staff rooms are very polite places, yeah, and people rarely challenge each other. But you're kind of saying that kind of challenging of each other does happen in that forum.
It does. It's very good. And what is wonderful is that we have colleagues who have an interest in education but may not be in a classroom, and they join us on HIIE. They come to ask questions. They maybe just lurk and watch. Although I hear lurking is not the good word now. It's just passive observer. But they will throw something in from their point of view, from maybe an industry point of view or a computing programming point of view. And that's very good for us to have, or maybe a parental point of view, something might go through, or a teacher with a specific interest might hold out for that, like someone who's interested in gifted students, somebody else who's special needs. They will hold out for their corner, say, hang on, don't forget us. And it's very good for the rest of us. Very good for each other, just to watch each other's perspective and take it into account.
So how did you first get interested in technology and education?
Do you know something? I was thinking about that recently because of the lady whose junk computer was sold for $200,000 last week in America, one of the first Apples. Literally the week before I was leaving UCG, way, 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 way back, To my discredit, I cannot remember her name. She just called into the science group who were doing the HDIP one day and said, anybody want to see the new computer? And she showed us an Apple IIe. And when that little green thing started to flash, I was smitten. I just thought it was wonderful. And when I got to my teaching school, the school I taught in, I've taught in only in the one school all my life, a very forward teaching principal, Sister Josephine, bought a room full of computers and kind of said, here you go, here's it, go play, here's it, and always pushed us if we wanted to do a course, if we wanted to upskill ourselves. She said, you do that as long as you get my girls up to scratch. Let's go for it.
And there we must leave my interview with Mags Amond. But we did speak for longer, and I hope to bring you the rest of our conversation on a future programme. And I want to thank Mags for her time in recording the interview. Well, this week's Inside Education is the last for this school year. I'm taking a break, and I look forward to returning with a new series of Inside Education in the autumn. In the meantime, you can listen to over 220 podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. You can write to me with comments, ideas or suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Until the autumn, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye and hoping you all have a great summer. Thank you for listening throughout the year.